minus 10 seconds.
Get ready. Ready for the hottest new podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact. By way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Hebner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I am joined by the two greatest professional wrestling referees of all time. First and foremost, he's strutting, he's cutting, he's styling, he's profiling, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. And, well, he's got an empty house, so he's definitely happy this week, Mr. Brian Hebner. But first, Jimmy, man, I caught a glimpse of your... let's say appearance on the Wrestling Inc. podcast just now, because I mistakenly didn't see it somewhere else. And well, let's just say go over and subscribe to the Wrestling Inc. podcast on YouTube and you will see why I, well, let's just say we popped.
Wait. What did Jimmy do? He didn't cuss, did he?
No, I didn't cuss because we can't cuss on Wrestling Inc. anymore. They like us to keep that kind of under the radar. Just keep it.
Well, I can never be on. I can never be on that, Jimmy.
But I did pay a little homage to John Cena at the Oscars this week. Let's put it that way. And I was a little jacked up, not jacked physically like B. Heb, but I was pumped, and I figured I'd try and pop the boys, which I did.
Nice. Well, boys, I had text y'all earlier, and to let you know, yeah. RJ, I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
No, you're good, dude.
Okay, and I texted y'all earlier that I'm very excited and amped today about this program today. So that has not gone away, by the way. And I warned y'all before we got together, so don't be surprised about some craziness that happens today. So, and it's 74 or 72 degrees right now. So it's wonderful. And by the way, it's a very popular time to be a Hebner and to be on the diamond. If you don't know what the diamond is, that's called a baseball or softball field. Trevor went 4-for-6 over two games yesterday, had a home run, had a double, and had, I think, two or three, maybe four, but I'm not going to exaggerate, at least two to three RBIs. As we speak, I just got a text that both my daughters just got a hit, and both one of them's playing third and one of them's playing right field. So the Hebners are just killing it. So, yeah, I'm loving it.
Nice.
Well, they're killing it in the ring for so many years. Now they're killing it on the ball fields.
Let's not count the ring out yet.
No, not just yet. You never know.
Never know.
Well, never know. That DNA, it runs deep.
but Trevor, though, man, he's kind of.
I get it.
He's just got to get off the sauce. That's all.
I get it. So, you know, I get the visual aspect of the referee not being as big as the boys, but you want to make it look authentic, like UFC, for example. Look at Big John McCarthy, man. He dwarfs some of those guys.
Yeah. Look at these NFL referees. I'm like wowed about that, man. They're all jacked up. Like, you could tell they all go to the gym and they care about what they look like when they're out there. It's cool. Well, we'll see.
And they don't wear medium shirts, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get to that in our referee review this week. Spoil alert. For those of you that listen to the show each and every week, you know what we're going to be talking about with that. But before we do that, let's send it up to our first count.
This is your one count.
We touched on it briefly last week, guys. The first inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2024 is Paul Heyman. Since then, we've had three other inductees into the Hall of Fame for 2024, WrestleMania 40 down in Philadelphia in a few weeks. Second inductee is Bull Nakano, that was reported by ESPN. And then I believe it was Friday it came out that the U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda are going in. And then yesterday, as we're recording here on Tuesday evening, on Monday, Muhammad Ali will be posthumously, I can't say that word, but you know what I mean, inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I believe his widow is going to be inducting him. This is the first Hall of Fame class under the regime of Triple H, Paul Levesque, Hunter, whichever name you want to call him. But Jimmy, man, this is, you know, obviously I would assume Paul would be headlining it.
Yeah, you would definitely think it's a close call, because Muhammad Ali is definitely a game changer for this business. He changed the game for boxing. He was really the first boxer to come out and do kind of wrestling style promos against his opponents and trash talk them and do that sort of stuff. And he got that from superstar Billy Graham, because he was a big fan of wrestling. Muhammad Ali, and he gravitated. He did stuff before WrestleMania 1 where he was, special guest referee in that. But he came to the forefront then. People started to see him then being a part of wrestling. And that kind of legitimized the business for a lot of fans, because they saw, wow, if the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, can get into pro wrestling, then maybe it's not such a carny thing, so to speak. I'm throwing up the air quotes here. You can't see it, but he was definitely, I'm just surprised he wasn't in already. Once they announced it, it's like, wait, he's not in?
Yeah. It was one of those things you kind of had to step back and actually look it up. It's like, wait, I thought he was in already, but I guess not. But, and I believe it's himself and the US Express, Wyndham and Rotunda, all three of them, were at WrestleMania 1. There in Madison Square Garden. So he's kind of paying homage to the first WrestleMania there. So it's good to see.
No, it absolutely
I just think that Paul Heyman should be the headline for what he's done for our business and what he's doing for our business. I literally, and I'm not trying to be controversial, but I literally have a problem with Muhammad Ali going into the Hall of Fame. I do. I think that he should go into the Boxing Hall of Fame. What has he really contributed to the wrestling business, in my opinion? What makes him more important than, let's just say, I'm throwing it out there, a Jimmy Corderas, a Mike Chioda, a Earl and Dave Hebner? What makes him any better than those four people I just named? To me, Zippo, zero, nada. Don't get me wrong, the man's a great man. He did a wonderful thing for the boxing sport. Where's the contributions to a degree of Hall of Fame for the wrestling side of it? I have a little issue with that, and I don't want to dig deep enough like that, and I don't want to be that guy, but Paul Heyman is a wrestling guy, always has been, and deserves to be the headline, and I think that most people are going to want to listen and look at Paul Heyman more so than Muhammad Ali's wife.
That point I do absolutely get, and I thank you for putting me in that, and of course, the Hebner brothers and Mike and yourself, too. In that conversation, it's flattering, but at the same time, you know, Muhammad Ali is a draw, and he, wherever he goes, and in my opinion, he should be in every darn Hall of Fame there is,
right,
in the sports world, because he was not just a boxing guy. He did love professional wrestling. He did a lot of stuff in wrestling too, and stuff that we forget about in the 70s, way before WrestleMania, where he wrestled Inoki in Japan. And he did stuff where he got airplane spinned by Gorilla Monsoon in the ring at Madison Square Garden and stuff like that. So he has been there. But like I said, first WrestleMania, you needed big names to help sell the event. And not that Hogan wasn't a big name, and Piper and Orndorff and tagging with Mr. T.
Sort
of stuff. And Cyndi Lauper. And no disrespect to them, but there was no bigger name at the time in the world. Not just the world of pro wrestling, but in the world of Muhammad Ali. And as far as the headlining goes, I absolutely see your point with Paul Heyman, because he has contributed from his days of turning ECW from a small renegade outlaw promotion and developed a following, rabid following. And not only that, when he moved over, and you know, Brian, as well as I do, when he came over to WWE and working on this, especially on the SmackDown brand, how accessible he was, how interactive he was and his ideas, and when he was part of creative. Quick story, if you don't mind, really quick. Do you remember when they did the supermarket brawl with Austin and Booker T and stuff like that? I'm standing beside Paul Heyman watching this on the monitor because they had recorded it early in the day in the supermarket. So they go through their whole thing and we're laughing our asses off. It's great stuff. And at the end, Booker covered in all these food and flour and all this stuff. He throws them on the conveyor belt at where you go and you pay for your goods, right? And Austin's walking out of the building with his back to the camera. And I just blurted out, just offhandedly, I said, "Price check on a jackass." And Paul Heyman looks at me, goes, "What did you just say?" I said, and I thought he was mad. I said, "Price check on a jackass?" He says, "Why weren't you in the meeting?" And they edited that in afterwards. They VO'd it after and put it in the show because SmackDown was taped at that time. So he he listened to everybody. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Paul was that kind of guy.
I tell you, we're staying on this way too long, but it's okay. We're paid by the minute. So anyway, but I am fascinated by Paul Heyman's expressions, by the way he sells what he's doing. He makes Roman Reigns seem like God, like he is God. And some of it's comical to the fact that we know Roman Reigns is not God, but damn it, Paul Heyman makes you believe it. And it's just, that's just one thing, you know, one little small thing throughout his entire career of things that he has accomplished and done. I just think he's so deserving. I can't think of anyone. And according to things I've read and saw, they were supposed to do this earlier for him and he declined it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know why he's accepting it now and he's still active, because that was the big thing. He didn't want to be active, but my God, so deserving, so deserving.
No, absolutely. And if I may just really quickly again, touch on this, it's both surprising and not surprising.
Philly?
Because I'm surprised that he's going in while he's still active. I thought they would save it for when he does he was ready to wind down his career. Let's say it that way. But at the same time, being in Philly, it just feels like the right spot for it.
Oh, I agree with it. Yes. I just didn't know why he would do it at that point, that he didn't want to do it before. He
probably had to get talked into it. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think a lot of people, especially with Paul, it's got to get talked into it because doesn't feel like he gets he should have the recognition and all that stuff. And, but rightfully so, that we should recognize him this year at Philadelphia. Another guy that I want to talk about before we get over to our ref and review, our jam-packed ref and review this week, is Okada is now All Elite officially, and he has turned heel, and joins the Elite. Jimmy, this is something that a lot of people online and so-called experts and journalists and whatever have said that this was just a matter of time before he came to AEW. And from what the reports are coming out as, according to, I believe it's the Wrestling Observer, that his deal with AEW's worth about $4.5 million per year. Later, obviously, that came out that it wasn't official, that it was a considerable amount difference, lower. But Jimmy, this I think this is the kind of guy that he's worth every penny.
You could say that. I mean, it did surprise a lot of people, including myself, that he wasn't pre-advertised. That's one of the things I think AEW needs to do more, is if you're going to debut a guy like an Okada who people are waiting for, tell people that he's going to be there. Have them tune in instead of surprising them. That's the one thing I did. Him coming out and joining the EVPs, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, I'm going to give it a wait and see attitude, because that audience doesn't want to boo Okada. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
They want to cheer him. And you can see the difference right now when Nicholas and Matthew Jackson, who are doing a great job as executive heels, they're booing them. They're getting booed. They're doing their job. They're doing it right. And having a guy like Okada joining them, who the audience definitely, you can see the difference. He got on Collision this past week. When he got tagged in, the crowd cheered. When it was Matt or Nick, they booed. Mm-hmm. So that crowd is divided. They're split. So, and as far as the money goes, I'm going to give it a wait and see attitude. I know people are out there saying he's worth every penny. I don't know yet. to me, you need a lot of return for your investment here. They're having issues, as we've talked about before, with growing their audience. Is he going to be that game changer? Is he going to be that guy that's going to help them grow their audience? We saw this past Wednesday, last Wednesday, that, you know, their numbers were a little down. Even the numbers on Collision with Okada on the show were a little down. That's a measuring stick. That's in some regards, I know people are going to say, well, they watch it in different ways now. Yes, I get that.
Please.
At the same time, television ratings is where the money is right now until 2025 when Netflix kicks in for the other guys. But that's why I'm going to wait and see. Will they get the return on their investment with Okada?
And I'm going to say this. I think that basically it's a new toy. And as Jimmy said, the response is going to be a little bit before they get all in to where he's a heel. That made sense too. All in.
I like what you did there.
I know, right? Imagine that.
But
you
I think
it like a cease and desist order now coming to your door or something.
But I think everybody's just excited about the, you know, that he's in there, that he's at AEW. And I think that'll wear off, if, you know, like everybody else. And I think that he will get into that heel gimmick. As far as the money goes, not a chance. Way overpaid. God bless him. I don't blame him. I wish I could be him. But there is no way in this world we're going to see ratings go to where they need to be to pay this man. Attendance go to where it needs to be to pay this man. It's not happening. He's not a big enough star here in the U.S. to do that. And I'm just being honest. He's just not. You know, you're talking about $4.5 million a year. Okay, well, instead of selling 3,000 tickets every episode of Rampage, some more than others, don't get me wrong, because I know that people will start beating me up about it. But generally, if you average their attendance out, it's about 3,000, okay?
Yeah.
If you get to 6 and you average in 6, you're still not going to get your investment back. If you get your ratings to 1 million, you're still not getting your investment back because you've done nothing that you haven't already done. So I way overpaid, and I hope and I do pray, I swear to you, that this works out for them and they do get the return investment, because I'm telling you right now, it ain't happening. That's why WWE jumped out of that shit. And they were like, go ahead. If you guys want to sign up for $4.5 million, y'all do it, because we're fucking not. And WWE's got the money. Nobody's disputing that. But there's also a time when someone goes, is that car, that 2024, worth it? When I can buy this 2019 with less mileage. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm putting down here?
Yeah.
The investment is not going to return itself, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, like I said, and I'll reiterate too what Jimmy said too. I guess it's just a matter of, hey, let's wait and see kind of thing. Hopefully it'll pan out. And, you know, the ratings will go up for him, because obviously we've all said it here on the show, and we're all here for make the wrestling business better. And I think with Okada coming to the States, and he allegedly is making his new home here in the States. So he's moving
right to
the States to make the best of it. And let's see where it goes. Keep an open mind.
Sorry, Jimmy, Brian, go ahead.
I just want to ask you a question, Jimmy.
Yeah.
What do you think has to happen for them to get their return?
Man, I wish I had a good answer for you, but there has to be so much. Like you said, you not only have to pop higher numbers, they have to be extremely incremental.
Yes.
And that might grow slowly, but they're not going to get to the level, like you said, of where the other guys are right now, because the other guys are a global monster. Especially under the new regime of TKO and Endeavor. It's almost like, you know, the Monday Night Wars, where we had WCW was on top in the ratings for 83 weeks and everybody was, we have a war going on. If they could just concentrate on stop this us versus them mentality and just concentrate on them themselves and make themselves better, they will get better as far as, you know, making more money. But again, that is a lot. That's baseball player money.
Yeah.
That nobody's made in this business. And there's, again, I hate to sound like a broken record. I would like to give it time, but I'm on your side, Brian, with this one, where I don't see it. them getting their return on investment on their return.
I mean, you got to think about some of the players.
I said that backwards, but return on their investment.
but think about some of the guys they've brought in that were major stars, and they still are major stars. I'm not saying they're not, but what I'm saying is they're not bringing in major differences. The ratings aren't popping. They're not. Right. Attendance is not popping. Attendance is very poor. I mean, let's just cut it the way it is. You're going to the Boston Garden, and you got what? I should have had this in front of me, so I don't want to throw a number out there, but I'm going to throw a number out there anyway. What was it, like 5,000?
Right.
At the Garden?
I mean, it's a big place. And they pretty much have announced without announcing that Sasha Banks is going to be there.
Right.
I mean, go ahead, Jimmy.
No, Mercedes Moné now.
Well,
I know. I'm just
I didn't even know the name.
I know. I'm just busting balls.
You know? No, that's okay. but you see what I'm getting at. Do you think if they throw Okada on this card, now all of a sudden they're going to sell the building out and open it up?
No. And you see who's going to pop a big number? A guy like a Sting in his retirement match. That pops a big number. You need a huge global star, not just to cater to that hardcore diehard guys who used to back in the day tape trade for New Japan tapes and stuff like that. That's the audience they're catering to. And that's the one thing they need to get away from is, yes, you want to cater to that audience, but you can cater to others as well.
Yes.
They're starting to do that. I'm starting to see a little more progression with them starting to tell more stories and trying to get angles over. But they do, as I say a lot of times, trying to cram 20 pounds of potatoes in a 10-pound bag. You can't, sometimes on some weeks, some guys are going to have to sit on the bench and others are going to have to be on the field as starters.
Yeah. Yep. So I just looked it up. They are set up the AEW Dynamite Big Business Wednesday, March 13th, this evening. They're set up. Their current setup is for 8,248 fans. They have 7,535 tickets distributed, which makes an available amount of 713. As this came out about 3 hours ago, about 2:45 this afternoon, it was up 239 from yesterday, previous, so Monday. And then the current setup, the capacity, to put this into perspective, the capacity of the TD Garden there in Boston is 19,580. Right. So there you have it.
Less than half the building.
Right.
Exactly.
So I can't imagine, sorry, Brian, but I can't imagine their whole stage setup is going to take up half the seats.
No, it will. They'll just move it all forward.
Exactly. They'll just push the two condom entrances forward there.
Right. Exactly. And it's not what, like, me and Jimmy and RJ are not trying to knock on it. What we're saying is, if you're going to pay a man $4.5 million a year, then that number that RJ just read, 296 tickets have been sold in 3 days. Since he debuted, there should have been 1,000 tickets that were sold or more. Correct. And they should have been opening up all these fucking areas all over that arena. That ain't happening. And I don't see, if it's not happening when the guy debuts and everybody knows he's here and that's not doing anything, what's going to happen next, by the end of next year, in the next 6 months? I don't know. I'm just saying, I just think they overpaid.
No, yeah. I hear you.
Yeah. Well, like I said, let's wait and see. Let's hopefully tonight the big business will do big business, pun intended. And, you know, maybe they'll pop the ratings. Who knows? We'll touch back on that next week, I'm sure. But something I do want to touch on before we bring in our guest, Mr. Matt Morgan, this week is our Reffin' Review.
This is Reffin' Review.
According to Fightful Select, Sammy Guevara was suspended for the February 14th match with Jeff Hardy. It said that Jeff suffered an injury and Sammy did not follow the proper concussion protocol. A little context to it. I believe Matt talked about it on his podcast, Extreme Life with Matt Hardy. So often, both of you have been in the ring when something like this has happened. Somebody's been concussed. Well, I know we'll talk about it with Matt Morgan, but Brian, it's something that whether it be a referee, whether it be a worker, you get knocked senseless sometimes. You get loopy a little bit. But what do you think about this? There's no easy way to really put it, but what do you think of this, the suspension of Guevara?
I think honestly, it's a little over the top, but then when you go into the fact that he hit his finish, it becomes worthy of the suspension. But you know what? There's also some other accountability that's not there. And that's on that referee. The referee, if people don't know, I'll explain to you, are more powerful than you think. They control that match. A match can end and begin anytime we want it to, whether it be right or wrong. This was the wrong way. A referee did not insert himself to end a match. Paul Turner, who's their senior referee, who I just think would have done the right thing had he been still in Ring of Honor, let's just say years ago before he got brought up to AEW, has no confidence in being the man there. If I could just touch on one thing, and it's not about me putting me over, but it's about the way things are. When I was in TNA, and also WWE, but not as much as in TNA, I was the head referee, and I was the 100% head referee. If I wanted to end something, I obviously it had to be for a reason, and it better be for a good one. And they trusted me to do that. Hence, Jeff Hardy versus Sting. Okay? That match needed to go home. So you take it home. I'm not saying it's all Paul Turner's, you know, responsibility and fault, but he is at fault 100% here as well. He obviously got the same word that supposedly Sammy Guevara got and continued to count and let them do their thing. No. As my dad would say, it's as funny as it sounds, take a ref bump. Get in the way, take a ref bump, and ring the fucking bell. Save a man's life. Save a career of someone. Or just tell that guy, no, fuck you. You're not getting your shit in. I'm going to count you out. Or I'm going to count the fucking 1, 2, 3. Roll him up, whatever. I've done many spots where I've said, roll him up, we're going home. What's wrong? Just roll him up, and I'll tell you. Boom, 1, 2, 3. We're done. Of course, the man's mad, but then when we get to the back, he figures out, oh, fuck, I didn't realize he was that fucked up. Well, I did, because I'm a referee that's doing my job. And I'm not saying Paul wasn't doing his job. He probably did realize it. But you got to be more than just standing there and letting them do what they want to do when you know the situation is what it is. So they should have suspended him, too, if there is a protocol. I think their protocol is bullshit because there is not one. How do you let Darby Allin jump off of a fucking 100-foot ladder through glass? I mean, what protocol is being held up there? So what I'm saying is, if there's a protocol and you want to suspend Sammy Guevara, then you should suspend him too. And I'm talking about Paul Turner. Paul Turner, you know I love you, but you could have done a lot more if you knew the situation. And according to everything I've read and actually talked to people, everyone knew he was hurt, and it was very obvious too. So if he didn't realize he was hurt, that's another ref and review that I'm sure Jimmy Corderas might even say, fuck, 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 fuck.
Brian, you know, to be honest with you, I can't argue with anything you said there. And I get the old West, the old school mentality of you get your bell rung, you continue, you finish the match. You know, you hurt your arm, you hurt your shoulder, whatever the case may be, your knee's wobbly. You want to finish the match. That was it. Get the job done. But this is a different world, and it started in the WWE when I was there, where they said, if you think someone is loopy or gets their bell rung or something is off or isn't right, you check on him and you stop the match. If you feel, I know the boys are going to get hot at you, but you tell them it wasn't your call, it was our call. And that's the way it goes. And they, you know, we had our little signals, and I know a lot of people know what the hand signals are when we check on somebody. And you, sometimes you have to protect the boys from themselves, from that attitude of, yeah, man, I got my bell rung, but I'm going to keep going. No, you got your bell rung. Stay on your ass. Stay down. You don't, you can even call the match. They have a ringside physician there. And I'm not saying that all referees should be trained medical practitioners or anything like this, but you have to be able to recognize signs of when somebody is hurt. And if you think something is wrong, call Doc Sampson. He's right there. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have guys like Doc Rios or Larry Heck or whoever that might come check on this guy and make sure he can go.
Yep.
That's it. Simple. And, you know, like you said, Brian, I love Paul Turner to death too. I think he does a wonderful job down there, but at the same time, he has to be not afraid to do that and step in when he needs to step in. And I feel that sometimes it's that mentality where the boys, it's the Wild West down there.
Yep.
You know, and mm-hmm. they get to do what they want to do. And not recognizing the signs, Sammy Guevara did hit his finish after, you know, he knew that that knee connected.
Yep.
He did know that the knee connected, and he should have been the one to initiate and say, hey, you check on him.
Yeah.
Yep. Can he continue? And there's nothing wrong with waving off the match.
And Jimmy, here's the last thing I'll say, and I will let it go. Is there a protocol? What is your protocol? If that's your protocol is the fucking shits. You're going to hurt somebody. We're not just talking about some guy in the back that Sammy could, you know, give two fucks about. This is Jeff Hardy on top of it. Mm-hmm. A megastar. Can get a pop in any arena around the world. He's hurt. Jeff Hardy will work through anything. Believe me, I've seen it. In ridiculous situations. Not on my watch, boys. It don't happen. Maybe when I was young, didn't know what I was doing and intimidated and scared by the boys, which seems to be the case right here. I don't know. It's just, there is no protocol. Throw that shit out the window.
Yeah. No, I've been blessed to be the referee in pretty much all those TLC matches you saw with the Dudleys and the Hardys and Edge and Christian and stuff like that. And every time there was a crazy bump, like when Bubba and Matt went through the tables from it, falling off the ladders inside the ring, first thing I did is run over there and check. And they took their time, and I, you know, exactly. And if I got it back, I knew they were good to go. Because if you're loopy, yeah. doing that to them, they don't know.
Nope.
Better, they don't know to squeeze back. You know, yeah. but.
Hey. And Jimmy, you know why that was introduced, correct?
Yeah.
This gimmick? Mm-hmm. Because when your brain's not functioning properly, you don't feel this.
Exactly.
You don't feel it. Just like you could grab their boot and you could squeeze the toe inside the boot and squeeze it. And usually you could they would do a flex back to let you know they're okay.
Right.
As another way we would manipulate not giving the shit away at right. TNA. If they don't do it, which I've seen it many times, they don't do it. I know. You
That's
know?
It. And,
yep.
Boom. There yep. goes the X. Throw up the X. And so, when you throw up the X, the other guys know that there's something wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just this very, very poorly done.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, like you guys said, it goes back to, you know, the proper training, the proper way. Mm-hmm. But so I did want to touch on this before we bring Matt in mm-hmm. is, and this is both for AEW and WWE as it happened just last night. AEW seems like it happens all the time, but keep no. doing it because you're giving us content. But it's a position of the referee when they're counting the pinfalls.
Right.
So they see the shoulders down. Jimmy, you pointed this out online, and we went over and saw the video of the match, the main event last night this past week of Monday Night Raw. The shoulders were down, but how does the referee know that they're down when, for better use of term, the referee's staring at them in the ass? They're not staring at them at the shoulders.
Yeah, but they're staring at the wrong ass. Let's put it that way.
right.
Just to let you know, you're killing me, Spider, once again.
Love it,
One
Jimmy.
Thing I do like about Spider is he doesn't do that sweep. I will give him credit for that on the false finishes. But when that roll-up happened with Sammy and Chad Gable, yes, he pulled them a little tight. And to those out there who were claiming his shoulders weren't down, maybe his shoulder blades weren't down, but his actual shoulders were touching the mat. But the referee couldn't see that because he was behind Sammy, who was blocking the vision. And I was told back in the day by the boss, look, you get yourself in a position to see both shoulders when you count. It doesn't matter if you're blocking the cameraman. There's five other cameramen out there that can get the shot that they need for it. And I remember one time, he, to see both shoulders, there was a pinfall near the ropes. where the shoulders were parallel with the ropes. I slid out of the ring and counted on the apron. And when I got to the back, Vince was out there, pulls the glasses down, goes, gives me the old, come here. Says, why did you slide out of the ring to count? I said, well, that was the only way I could see both shoulders, Vince. He said, okay, then. Pushed his glasses back up and sat down.
Right.
And I looked at Gerald Briscoe, and Briscoe gives me the thumb up. Good answer. You know, and he was fine with it. You have to be in position to be able to see both shoulders, or else, you know, it's like you said, RJ, it's not just a WWE thing. It happens in AEW all the time where they're beside the guys, maybe because they're told, don't get in the way of the camera shot. So it may not all be on the referees, but at the same time, they've got to say, look, we have to be in a position to be able to see both shoulders, whether it's a little further back, you're not right up, you know, snuggling against them. Back up a little bit where the camera can get in there and get the shot. But you have to see both shoulders to count that pinfall.
So two things I want to say real quick, and I know we need to get out of here, get Matt in here, but two things. One, Jimmy, very, very, very familiar situation I had. You'll remember it because I came to you because I was scared as shit. It was a Kurt Angle Undertaker match. I took a hell of a bump. I did great. I thought I did anyway. Thought everything was great. The match went off good. In my earpiece, it says, see Vince when you come to the back. I went, holy fuck. And I knew it wanted to pat me on the back. I knew that. I get up there. His glasses were already off. So I've never got to see that to my face like you're describing where he takes them off. But I've seen it do it with other people. But his was already off with me. And he says, how did you count that finish? And I said, I counted 1, 2, 3. Where were you positioned? And I said, to the side there. Be at their shoulders from now on or go home. That simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked the fuck off, scared to death, shit my pants. And I remember this. I went right up to Jimmy and said, Jimmy, I'm fucked. He said, no, you're not. Jimmy told me. He said, no, you're not. No, you're not. You just need to make sure that shit don't happen no more. You need to spin your ass around, even if it takes you an extra 2 steps to go. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we all have our little stories with learning how to do that.
If I could throw one more out there, because I got lambasted by Vince one time. It was an 8-man tag match with the Killer Bees, the Young Stallions against Volkov, Sheik, Sika, and Umaga of all the, and it just turned into a cluster for them. It was the drizzling shits. And I knew it. I felt it. And I thought, okay, what's going to happen when I get back to Gorilla? And there was Vince. And he tore into me big time. You know, he really tore into me big time. And I thought, like you did, Brian, oh, I'm going to get fired. That's it. I'm done. And Jock Lanza came over to me. And he put his arm around me and he kind of walked me up down the stairs in the back of Gorilla and said, don't worry, everything's going to be all right. Because if he didn't want you here, you'd be gone already. And then no word of a lie, he came up to me later on. And he said to me, listen, I didn't mean to tear into you so bad, but you know that was terrible what happened out there tonight. I only want you to get better. And if I didn't think you would get better and be the person, the referee we want you to be, you wouldn't be here right now. So learn from this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I was like, oh, thank goodness. And then Jack was there, and Jack was like, see, told you. Don't worry. You'll be okay.
Well, I wanted to say something else, but I'm not going to because I know that Matt Morgan's coming in and Matt's a wonderful dude. And I just don't want him mad at me because he's a very big man. So RJ, I think you need to go ahead and send us to our second count so we can bring Mayor Matt Morgan in, by the way, because I do not want to get yelled at after not seeing him for a little bit here. So let's do that. Can we do that, RJ? Cause I don't want
to
get yelled at.
Sure can. So why don't we send it up to our second count and we'll be right back in with Mr. Matt Morgan.
Yahoo!
This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex, guys. Shouldn't you always be at your best? Make 2024 the year to maximize your performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll be able to receive your prescription within days. And the best part, guys, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to your door in a discreet package. With Blue Chew, men everywhere are excited to see the postman, because when your package has arrived, your package has arrived. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code REFIN at checkout. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code REFIN, R-E-F-I-N, to receive your first month free. Just pay $5 shipping. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring our show today. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it.
This is your two count.
Welcome back to our second count. And I do want to say that I am very, 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 very excited to bring in not only a wonderful wrestler, a wonderful person, but a wonderful person to me as far as just being a friend and someone who genuinely cared about me. And we were able to talk as human beings and not as a referee to a wrestler, brother. This was a genuine conversation. Talk about his family. He talks about my family. I want to bring in Matt Morgan. Whoops, sorry. Mayor Matt Morgan. Welcome to the show, Matt. And I also, before you start, I want to tell you real quick, thank you so much for your contribution that you did on our 100th episode. You were one of the main ones that drove me to tears, which is very hard to do. And I'm not lying to you. You can ask RJ. I think RJ was going to pass the fuck out because he saw me crying. I don't know what Jimmy thought, because Jimmy's seen me cry a lot through my career. But it was I was so shocked, and it was awesome. And so I just want to thank you for that. And so welcome to the show, Matt. Love you, buddy. Here you are.
Me too. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for having me on, guys. I love you both. Thank you guys very much for having me.
No, it's a pleasure for us to have you on, especially considering you do a show now as well, which is, you know, still connected to wrestling, which I love.
Yeah, I gotta feed the beast somewhere, feed the dragon somewhere along the way, right?
I know, and speaking of dragons, you know very well that I'm a big Ricky the Dragon guy, and one of the weirdest advices I ever got in my life was from all people Bruno Sammartino. I won't get into the specifics on how we ended up in the same minivan when I was driving everybody to TV here in Canada, but in the van was Classy Freddy Blassie sitting gunshot. Lou Albano was in the band, Mr. Fuji, Girl of Monsoon, and Bruno Sammartino. And I had never really talked to Bruno at the time. It was kind of like, hey, how are you? That kind of thing. Very cordial. Sure. But he started to ask me questions about me. And not to make this about me, but he's asking me questions like, how old are you? Where are you from? When did you start with, and all this sort of stuff? He says, would you like some advice? And I'm like, oh my God, Bruno Sammartino is going to give me some advice. Yes, sir. I would love some advice. He says, get
to business. I knew it.
And I'm like, pardon me? He says, because once it gets in your blood, it will never leave your body. And, you know, the other guys in the van are going, come on, Bruno, leave the kid alone. If he wants to do it, let him do it. Oh, I'm just trying to help him out. It didn't work. It was already in there.
Well, if I can, just for a second here, thank God you did stick with it and do what you did, because both you and Brian, I can count on two hands how many times both of you have helped lead my green ass through a match when I was with WWE and very new, very intimidated, very scared. Here I'm living out my childhood, 6-year-old childhood dream, right? And they called me up after like 8 months of training, by the way, of being on Tough Enough to now being on SmackDown somehow magically, because I'm 7 feet tall, 300 pounds, right? That's why they pulled me up. But you guys, and people don't understand this enough, that back then, the referee was so heavily relied upon by the office to be buzzed. And I'll never forget this. You had my match one time with Chris Benoit, and they buzzed you to tell me to continue to work his back. And I'm hitting him with all the stuff that I knew as a greenhorn. And they're like, do a backbreaker. I've never done it a day in my life. And people could go back and watch this match. I pick Chris Benoit up and I do a reverse backbreaker, meaning I put him on his gut first across my knee, because I didn't know what I was doing. But the moral of the story is, and then there's another time in Reading, Pennsylvania, Brian, that I suffered my first stinger. It was a multi-man tag match, including Big Show. And Big Show had been clotheslined over the top rope. He was on my team that night. And the ropes were shaking heavily with those helicopter cables. They were still shaking because he's so big. And I get clotheslined over the top rope next. The second rope clips the back of my head as I'm flipping over the top rope, knocks me out cold. I let go of the rope and spike on my head on the concrete floor with a little bit of padding. And I didn't, my part in that match was over at that point. The finish then happened inside the ring. I never saw it because I was out cold, but you came out to the side with me and I didn't know where I was, what I was doing. And you told me just lay there. They're going to come get you. You're going to be fine. You're in Reading, Pennsylvania, and everything else that you said to me to get me through that. And that was the scariest time of my career, quite frankly. Oh, wow. And not enough is said about how freaking pivotal you two specifically, not all the referees, you two and your dad as well, Earl, to get a lot of younger guys and gals through their matches, let alone in a moment of injury. Instead of just doing this bullshit, which any robot can do, y'all, you came out there, got in my ear, and calmed me down because I was having a major panic attack on the floor doing, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Right.
And again, I'll never forget that, and I'll always appreciate that.
Well, Matt, you have to remember, like, first of all, we appreciate that. You know that. And, you know, you're only as good as who you're working with, too.
True.
So we're doing our jobs. We don't think anything special about it that what you're describing, which we feel special that it felt special to you.
Right.
But you listened. If you're hurt, you're hurt. If you're not, you're not. Yeah. And we had a huge conversation before you came on the air where some things happened the other night and the referee was not held accountable. And it's ridiculous to me. It's ridiculous.
I thought the same exact thing.
Yeah. So when you're working with someone that's like you who responds to what we tell them and mm-hmm. respects what we tell them, that's a huge thing. You know what I mean? It's just very, very huge. So it's me and Jimmy doing our job. We don't think anything about it other than, like I just said, we really do appreciate what you said, but that's what we're supposed to do.
But the referee also back then was a lot more respected because you guys had so many more years of experience than so many of us. And let's say there's those in which you didn't have more experience than they still respected you to get them through whatever, because you're being buzzed in by the office. The same is not happening today. You could obviously see it. It's very paramount.
Yes, it is.
And now, it's screwing up, and to be honest, it's screwing up the matches. Honestly, it's not helping the talent. It's not. It's hurting them.
Yeah, it is. And I absolutely agree with that, especially in today's day and age. And I understand you want to evolve and grow, be different mm-hmm. in the business. But I think what they've done is, you know, this business has been dangerous since day one, regardless of what you do. You can hurt yourself, like you said, jumping from the mat to the floor.
Right.
And blow out a knee or blow out an ankle or something could happen. Yeah. Yeah, it's that simple. A body slam can hurt you. It's that, but they've elevated that risk level. Do you think it's elevated too far where they?
Yes.
You know, the danger factor, like I'm worried somebody's going to get crippled or worse.
We're going to see it on national television. It's going to take place and we're all going to witness it. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be terrible. But I'm telling you, it's coming.
And it's self-induced.
It is self-induced because the guys and gals now think they got to outspot one another and do this. And to be fair, they're way more athletic than they were in my time. That's a great, good story. But that's still not, at the end of the day, putting asses in seats. What puts asses in seats is your character and getting people to emotionally invest in you. Great. If you think they emotionally invest in your moves, they're not going to keep coming. And worse, if they do, that's even worse for you because now you got to keep it up and keep upping the ante with each progressing match. And that's where I fear something bad's going to happen.
Yep. Now, would you agree with this point that there is a huge difference between a great in-ring wrestler and a great worker? It almost seems like we're losing the great workers.
We are, because we are. Absolutely, we are. Roman Reigns is a great worker. You can say whatever you want about him.
No, I agree.
He's a great worker doing less is more. He's getting things over with his facial expressions, his body language. Things that Hulk Hogan made millions of dollars off of, right? Him hulking up, you know, and things like that. Roman does things very similar in that regard, if you pay close attention, versus the guys that I don't mean to single out AEW, but it seems to be on that show where I see the most of it, where it is just high spot on high spot on high spot on high spot. And very athletic guys. I'm insanely impressed with their athleticism, if I'm being honest. But it's they don't understand how to tell the story of working a body part in the middle of the ring at all. Zero.
Yeah, try that stuff with a guy like Ole Anderson or Harley Race or Terry Funk and see what happens.
I would pay money to see the conversation. I don't know if you guys caught it, that AEW. I watched that pay-per-view the other night. I thought it was a good pay-per-view. But the Will Ospreay match versus
Takeshka.
Thank you, Takeshka. Takeshka's got the look, man. He's an impressive looking dude, and I think that dude could be incredibly over. But another story for another day. You saw the move they did with
Ospreay.
In the corner. Can you imagine? Okay, so real in the corner where it was supposed to be, he picked him up and gave him a suplex head first on the top turnbuckle. He completely missed the top turnbuckle, spiked Ospreay on his head, and Ospreay kind of his back hit the rope on the way down. Can you imagine the conversation backstage and your Harley Race, Ric Flair, JB, anybody, where the guy goes, and you know what? And then next, maybe I give you a brainbuster on top turnbuckle. No, that would never happen. They would be like, are you out of your mind? No, I'm not doing that. No, that's not happening here tonight, dude. No. So I don't know whose idea it was. It could have, I don't know if it was Takeshka's or it was Will's, because I know Will definitely likes to up his ante with each match, and he is incredibly impressive athletically. God, is he good. But again, he has a good look. He has good promos. He doesn't need all of that stuff. He doesn't see it yet, but I'm hopeful with him being on weekly television now instead of like the monthly stuff he does for Japan, New Japan. I hope he starts to see that because he is charismatic. He doesn't need all of the bells and whistles for all of his matches. He just doesn't. He is that good.
I think, Matt, you should do this. I think you should take that name in front of your name, which is Mayor, and take it off and put Blueprint in front and show these guys how to fucking work. How about that?
And put everybody to sleep, but I'll digress. You know what sucks, guys, is I watch the guys now, especially the bigger guys nowadays, like being able, like Luchasaurus, being able to do moonsaults off the top rope and things that I'll tell you this right now. My first day in OVW at the old Davis Arena in Indiana, I was there after our training was done, meaning nobody was supposed to be in the building. It was supposed to be me and a few other rookies with the crash pad out, and I'm doing moonsault after moonsault after moonsault. I did a shooting star after shooting star after shooting star onto the crash pad, not on anybody. Cornette walked in and goes, God bleep mother bleeper. Nobody's ever going to pay you money to be a 7-foot Rey Mysterio. What in the hell are you thinking, boy? And then like brought me in the back and really reamed into me. Like, you're never going to last doing stuff like that. They're not paying you to do stuff like that. They're paying you to be 7 feet, 300 pounds of shit kicker. Can you do that? And I said, yes, sir. And then from that moment on, I never did the high spot stuff. But what's frustrating is I was a former collegiate athlete. I played two sports, football and basketball. I had a 42-inch vert. And there's things I wanted to showcase in wrestling that I was never able to do because they made the big guy be fee, fi, fo, fum, I'm big, fat, slow, and dumb. And tackle spot, tackle spot, tackle spot.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So part of me athletically watches the guys today going, God, bring it. I wish I was wrestling today. But at the same time, the old school part of me goes, but they're not going to have long careers if they keep doing the stuff they're doing.
Right. You talk about big guys being able to do big, you know, great moves. Nowadays, you know, obviously these guys are ultra talented and can do some great stuff. But you take a guy, I look back at a guy like The Undertaker, who, he can do it all, but he picked his spots. When he walked, when he had that his opponent by the arm and walked that top rope and came down, it meant something. It actually meant something. Yeah, it wasn't just the fireworks display here, there, and there.
Right. And you walked away going, he might be the dead man. He might be half dead, half demon, whatever they call him. But boy, is he athletic. I remember thinking that in college, watching him.
Did you get the opportunity to sit under his learning tree at all and just
No.
be a sponge? Oh, that's
very,
too bad.
Brother, very, very minutely, because he very, very minorly, because he was hurt the two times I was called up to SmackDown. And then, like, the end of my SmackDown run, he had just come back. I did an overseas tour with him where he was showing me blow-up drills and things like that to improve my cardio. But other than that, not really. I got to learn from Glenn, though, who came on OVW to work a program with me. It was very nice of him. He didn't have to do it. Kane, rather. And who else? I'd say that's about it as far as the big guys go. Mm-hmm. Big Show was, he's a nice guy. Everybody loves him. But, like, he would come back after the matches with me. And, supposedly, and this is, I shouldn't even say it because it's third party and you can't trust anybody. They're always trying to gas the boys up against each other. So,
right. Yeah, Matt, you can trust anything. So
feel free to say anything you want here.
Well, that I wasn't safe and things like that. And I'm like, dude, you're three times the size of me. Like, I'm not coming for your spot, brother. You're one of one. There isn't another Big Show growing on a tree somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, you're one of one, legit, bigger than Andre even. So in real life, you know. So I never understood that. Although, you know, I've got guys that would gas it up, like, he's worried about other big guys coming. I don't think that was the case. But as far as being unsafe goes, I can't think of a single solitary spot that I wasn't safe with him in. Especially when I'm the one eating all of his offense most of the time.
So
I don't know. He would say that to Vince though, and then I'd have to go talk to Vince after.
I've eaten a Big Show chop. You don't want one of those.
Oh God, tons of those. Are you kidding me? He this and it was no big deal. You know, he was a good worker, especially for his size. Very athletic for his size, underrated. And it sucked because I was a big fan of his. Like, he was like my third favorite guy. It was Taker, Kevin Nash, Kane. I said then fourth was Big Show. Sorry. When he was Paul White and WCW. So it's that part's kind of sucked, right? Because you're meeting your hero, kind of, right? And then to see him do that. Again, it may not be true. Like I said, these are the boys that we know are notorious for gassing shit up and wanting to see fights in the locker room and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So that could be the case. So I that's why I paused before I said that.
So, Matt, let me ask you this. or not ask you yet. In a minute, I do have to ask you something. Because I'm very jealous of something that I've – we have what we call a run sheet. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. I'm gonna touch on that in a minute, but I wanted to tell you a story real quick, because speaking of Big Show, I was taking every single night. My off night basically became TV. I was taking the choke slam from him every single night on house shows.
Yes.
Now listen, he took care of me, but it was where he had to do it because of the placement of the other guys that were involved in the match. It was on the side by the ropes.
Yes. Yes.
The stiffest part of the ring.
What?
Yes. I'm 5'11", 140 pounds, right. maybe soaking wet.
So, Brian, were you new? Were you still a rookie?
No. I just could take a good bump. Take a good bump.
So Jim, it's Brian, you're a great beatboxer. Hey, go ahead and do beatboxing in the Kurt Angle, John Cena.
Oh, right. My goodness, go. Yes.
That hurts a lot. That hurts a lot less.
Next up, biggest choke slam from Big Show.
No, seriously, no bet. So I went to Fit Finley and I said, "Fit, pull me off this spot, buddy. I need a break. I really do. I need a break. I'm not being a bitch." I said, "But I'm sore, man. I get home." So he goes to Big Show and tells him, and they put Sparky. You remember Sparky, right?
Oh my goodness, Mike Sparks. Yes,
Mike Sparks.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Big Show finds out about it and gets so boo boo faced. It makes me feel like I'm a piece of shit. And I'm like, "Show, you're fine. You're taking care of me. It's just where I'm taking the bump. And we're doing it 265 goddamn days a year." Like,
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't.
Brian, you should have said that. Good.
I can't do it no more. I just want a break. Give me a month. Give me 1 month and I'll be back. Oh my God. It took him forever to get over it. He was so mad at me and I felt so bad that I had to do it. But goddamn, Matt, it hurt so bad.
No, you have a family to frigging feed. That comes first.
Yeah.
Above everything else. Because no disrespect to any of the boys and girls in the locker room. We all love catching up with one another. But be real. Is that somebody you're talking to every single day? No, it's not.
In a way.
Well, I don't know how much talking is going on.
Right. We're with each other every day.
See, and
I mean, show or right. any of the talents that are doing this. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And of course, Brian and I are of the same philosophy when it comes to referee bumps, that we shouldn't be able to bump like the boys.
No,
because then it makes it look like you should. Then it looks like you're trained to take a bump. And imagine trying to take a choke slam like you're not one of the boys.
Yeah, it's got to be tough, dude. Yeah. That has got to be tough because now you're not going to land flat, which you should. Will help protect yourself. Damn, mm-hmm. you're doing double duty on that technically when you think
yeah.
about it.
Yeah. All right, now let's get to the jealous part on the dirt. Yes. On the dirt sheet. On the dirt sheet. I just realized, dude, you went to the fucking NCAA tournament.
Yes, sir.
And yeah. played in it.
Yeah.
You bastard.
My freshman year. Yeah, yes, sir. Basketball was always my first favorite sport.
Well, I knew that. I knew that. And you're a big Laker fan.
Laker, no.
What was it? You told me you were.
I would follow wherever LeBron went. So back then when you were TNA, it had to have been the Cavs. But now it's the Lakers, yes.
It was the Lakers when I last talked with you about basketball. How long has he been in L.A.?
Okay, maybe it was then. He's been there for a hot minute. So you could be right since last time we talked.
Okay. All right. Well, see, I know I'm not crazy. I mean, I know I'm stupid. I know I'm stupid.
No.
But, dude, that's awesome. Can you explain that at all, that NCAA tournament experience at all?
Awesome. Just freaking amazing. Like, literally, my team was the Cinderella story of that tournament. It was 1996, March Madness hit, and we at Monmouth University, a small Division I school in the Northeast Conference, had to win our conference finals and be the champions of our conference to get the automatic bid to the NCAA tournament.
Were y'all any good before the tournament? Like, were y'all just a mediocre team? Oh,
good question. Good question. No, we were constantly between first and second place. We were.
Okay.
But the team, we had Rider University that was better than us. They beat us in the regular season. They beat us like one other time. Then when we played them in the championship game, we literally won on a pair of free throws at the buzzer.
Did you make them?
Wow.
Oh, I wish. No. I was a freshman. But it sent us some. It was covered all over SportsCenter. Everyone, going all over the floor and celebrating the whole university, the whole freaking town. And then we played Marquette University in the first round and got absolutely shellacked. Ooh. But got to be able to say I got an NCAA ring out of that. Got to play and get some experience in it, and check another box on the old list of things to do in life, right?
Right.
Now, where was this tournament at? The first round.
I want to say Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And where is Monmouth?
New Jersey, West Long Branch.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting because I find you had a few tryouts also with the Pacers and my hometown, Toronto Raptors.
I was going to say, your hometown.
And yeah. And how, not to bring it down, but how did you not get on with one of these teams, because there are not too many 7 foot tall guys with a 42 inch vertical out there that can crash boards like that.
So good question. I had already met Vince McMahon before these tryouts. I had tryouts with the Rams for the NFL Combine, along with the Pacers and the Raptors for the NBA. And I already met Vince, Jim Ross. I want to say Tom Pritchard and Kevin Kelly, because I'm from Fairfield, Connecticut originally. I now live in Longwood, Florida, but I used to live in Fairfield, Connecticut, two towns over from Stamford, where the Titan Towers are. And a friend of mine who wrote for the magazine, when I was trying to get a job, and figure out how does one get started to be a pro wrestler with WWE, came into a bar one night that I was bouncing. I was like, hey, do you ever think about being a wrestler? And this is how we met and became friends. And he's like, you come with me on Friday night. I'll get into the Titan Towers gym. Vince is there every Friday night with his trainer, Gary. You can meet him and let's see what happens. I'm like, okay. So for 6 months straight, I went there every single Friday night, opened a bump into Vince. And then finally, 6 months of doing it, I literally bumped into Vince. He was coming out of the men's room as I was coming into it because I was in my work clothes. I worked at Enterprise. I worked at Enterprise Rent-A-Car a block away specifically, so I can get paid to do a job out of college while at the same time being right there next to Titan Towers. No joke.
Did he grab your nuts? Did he grab your nuts?
Ha 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 Oh, he may. Maybe I would have got called up sooner. No, he.
yes, you would have. Might have had a little action on the other side too.
Brother, literally walked into my chest and completely sold. I was like, mmm, and looked up at me. He's like, "How tall are you, son?" And I told him, "I'm 7 feet." And he's like, "And have you thought about wrestling before?" I'm like, "Funny you should ask. I've been stalking you for the last 6 months, coming to this gym, hoping to bump into you and meet you." And so, long story short, he told me about what they were doing, what called Tough Enough on MTV, that was going to be starting Tough Enough season one, the one that Maven and Nydia won that season. I was supposed to be on that season, but they did something with my tape. I don't know who did what, but it didn't get turned in time. And long story short, he introduced me to like Jim Ross. I met Jim Ross's wife. I met Stephanie McMahon. I met a lot of people in that gym at Titan Towers and had all their contacts and was in constant contact with them all. And then they called me and told me about Tough Enough season two, that my tape has been sent in for that. I got picked for it. And now I got to go to Las Vegas to audition for the last remaining contestants. So a long story short, that's how I got my career started, was through Tough Enough, technically season two. And, but yeah, there's a lot of will behind that, because again, like a lot of, when I see guys talk about like wanting to be a wrestler their whole life, I'm like, did you really? Right. Or you're trying to take advantage because you're a big dude. You couldn't make it anywhere else. Now you're doing this, which is not, there's no shame in that.
Right.
So for me, I was doing NBA tryouts, not giving a shit. I was doing NFL, not giving a shit, because I already met Vince McMahon and all these other people from WWE headquarters. And I know I'm going to be working there someday. And so therefore, like I was on like cloud nine. I just knew it was a matter of when, or if it was a matter of when. And so like, I'm getting as big as I can physically, and putting on as much mass as I could, because this is what a mark I am, guys. I thought like everybody was using to shoot weights and height back in the day. I did not know that they were exaggerated. I didn't. I swear to God. Oh, my God. I didn't know. So like I'm ballooned up and I look like the Hoover Dam. You could have popped me with a pin and I would have just exhausted water out of me. I was up to my biggest, something like 368. I was enormous. And so I'm doing NFL, okay, O lineman tryout for Rams. That 368 is a good size, but for NBA tryouts, not so much.
No.
And the guys, to answer your question better, they're way longer. Their reach is way more than what I have. Like guys like Kevin Garnett were in my class of 95 for high school that just were, yeah, they're 7 footers, but their reach was like 7'3, 7'4, some cases 7'6.
Damn.
And it makes such a difference when you're down low and banging with them. Yeah, I could create space for myself and get my shot off because I'm bigger and stronger than all of them. But not, there's times that they'll come from behind when you're not able to make contact with them, and their athleticism and their length, it just outweighs everything. In fact, you guys, I one time tried to pitch it to Vince, my blueprint character. I ended up doing a TNA, Brian. Mm-hmm. I pitched it to Vince. I go, think of Ivan Drago from Russia. From Rocky. And he's doing the training in that specialized gym in Russia, right? He's being injected. He's doing all these like high-tech machinery workouts that Rocky doesn't have and normal people don't have. And I go, Vince, I literally am your wet dream come true as far as being the perfect giant. The perfect giant. The perfect giant 2.0. You combine Andre, wow. Big John Studd, Undertaker, Kane, Kevin Nash, Big Show. And then boom, you let just the huge pyro go off, and you just see a hulking silhouette in the background from my vignette. You don't, and he's coming. That's all you said. You show a heartbeat beating.
That's Vince, awesome.
Vince turned on it the minute I said synthetically created in Titan Towers. And I was like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. Synthetically created could mean steroid created, right?
Right.
And so that's where I lost him on it.
Oh, like he wasn't on him.
Right.
Exactly, right?
But you're right. It's probably where his mind went directly. You know?
It did. He flat out told me, he goes, "You had me until you said the word synthetically."
Like, he's gonna expose me.
There you go.
Damn it.
Which makes no sense. Like, dude, you're an owner of a company. Like, why are you jacked? That makes no sense at all, but whatever.
Well, he got to fulfill his dream and get in the ring as well. So I guess.
Yes, he did. So Matt, we know we're on a time crunch, so let's do this. I don't want to, but we're gonna have to, because
yes, sir,
you are mayor. we're gonna head to our third count. When we come back, we're going to have questions from Jimmy, myself, RJ, a couple of fan questions, and we're going to get you out of here. And I guess you're going to go ahead and keep fighting to – never mind, I'm not going to say it. but we'll do that when we come back in our third count.
This is your three count.
And we are back with our third count for a few listener questions and some questions from us as well. But our our first listener question comes from Nick Chin. He asks, a young me back in 2007, 2008 time frame won tickets to a TNA show, which also came with backstage passes. I met a few people, but I remember meeting you, Matt. My question is, why did you make me almost shit my pants that day meeting you?
That's great, huh? because I'm probably nervous about my mats, I'm guessing, or you're exaggerating because of my size. But nonetheless, I think that's awesome that you came to our show first and foremost. And you won one of Don West's special backstage pass deals. So I do think that's awesome. I'm happy you got to come backstage and meet some of the other stars, because that freaking roster, I'll put it, I swear to God, I'm not saying because I worked there. On paper, I'd put that roster against any roster any day of the week.
You said Don West, so that means he probably drank a gallon of chlorophane and all of his parents and all of his money was taken from his parents because they were held upside down. And we took all that shit. Yep.
All of it. And they walked home with a grab bag with like TNA DVDs from the first year.
That's awesome. I got a quick question for you, if you don't mind. It's a two-part question. Part A is, you've entered the podcasting world now, and you do a lot of stuff with my buddy of mine, Raj.
Love it, by the way.
Who I got to do some stuff with, and it's awesome. And what is it, A, you really like about doing the podcast stuff and doing and entering that world? And what, B, I hate to bring it to a negative, but what is it that kind of bothers you a little bit? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So the name of the show is Gigantic Pop. Originally, when I text Raj and my other co-host Glenn, like privately when we're watching stuff on TV, and like we'll make jokes back and forth, and I'll always say a huge pop, right? Because I'm laughing at something. Well, that was taken. That was already trademarked. So Glenn trademarked Gigantic Pop instead. And we're supposed to be talking about pop culture, you know, items such as TV growing up in the 80s, our TV shows we watched, our movies we watched, especially wrestling we watched. And we noticed the fans that came to subscribe really like when we talk about wrestling the most. So that's what we've been doing more of lately. And I love doing it because we're actually legit friends in real life with Raj Geary and Glenn Rubenstein. You say the thing I don't like in general, it's not just the podcast world. It's just social media in general, that I know when I came up through the business that like there was a certain level of respect I had to have at all times, a certain decorum. Right. And that's gone out the window in the shitter, where now anybody can just get on there and tear something apart. And it's like, well, what's your qualifications of tearing that match apart? Have you wrestled yourself? No? Okay. Then calm down, because there's things about these matches you don't understand or even get. And it doesn't seem to matter though, because the mass population is subscribed to that theory for the most part. So for that part, I don't like it, because I'd have to imagine it's not easy being a wrestler today, because of the fact there's such instant access and being shit on and crapped on and having your match just dumped on and annihilated by fans in comment sections, versus, you know, there's again that level of respect as a fan you always had before even getting into the business, right?
And a quick follow-up, sorry guys, to cut in here again, is it that people are quick to you critique something from an honest point of view, and you having lived in the business understand it, and they, not having been in the business, think you're being tribalistic and choosing sides, and why are you crapping on these guys more than you're crapping on these guys?
Great call. That happens absolutely. But to be fair, we're not alone. It's every single former wrestler, referee, or somebody that's actually been in the business previously that gets the same hate that were being tribalistic toward AEW or WWE. And some, so when I see that, I just call them on it. And I go, well, wait a minute. Literally, you're the same cat last week that just said I hated WWE. And I'm an AEW mark. So how is it now that I hate AEW and love WWE a week later? You know, so here's what I just totalized at the end of the day, that you're never going to make everybody happy. And if you can just be your true self at all times and speak your truth, that's all you can do. And the rest will take care of itself, you know. And you guys have obviously done a very successful job with your subscriber count and those that that listen to your show religiously, that you're obviously entertaining people. So keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Matt, I have to ask you this. I know you're not a WWE mark, because when I go through the dirt sheets, and I hope you don't get mad at me when I say this, because this is actually good for you, is what I'm saying. WWE didn't know what the fuck to do with you throughout
your
career.
Who are you telling?
They didn't know I'm reading all this shit on this paper, and it's like fucking a muddled mess. It's like they were trying to throw a fucking piece of shit at a fucking turd. Like,
pretty much.
So, but you did the best of your abilities. I think you did the best you could do for what you were given. But I think your career got resurrected when you went to TNA.
Definitely.
And I really think that people will remember you as a WWE superstar more so than TNA, because of the fact of where TNA was at the time and where WWE was at the time.
Yeah.
But my God, the things you did in TNA were awesome and amazing. And I was there for a lot of it. But I want to know one question.
Mm-hmm.
You came back and made a surprise guest or a surprise return at a house show in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next night you did another surprise visit or return in Wilkes-Barre. How good did it feel to kick the fucking face off of Brian Stifler?
Oh, my God. Always. Specifically because it was Stifler. Always feels great.
I went through the show notes and I went, I'm going to ask him about this, because I'd like to.
That's so random.
I would love to kick the shit out of him too.
But not Stifler's mom. But not Stifler's mom.
No, not his mom.
If anybody gets that reference or not.
He has kids.
Of course I do. We're the same age, brother. Hell yeah. Of course I do. American Pie reference. Good American Pie reference.
Okay. I hate the Monday morning quarterback, and I know you got to go here, but you said there was a difference when you entered TNA as opposed to WWE, because WWE had a different head of creative. Let's put it that way. And today's WWE, do you think if you had entered now, things may have been different? Especially
1,000%. Yes, because it's Hunter, it's Sean, it's guys that have been in the business as a wrestler and as successful wrestlers at that, right? That would know the best way to put me. So, like, look, I graduated college magna cum laude, fifth of my class, with a communications degree. I'm not somebody you slap a freaking stuttering character on. Like, really? Like, no. So. But then, to be fair to them, at the time, WWE is still in that not cartoonish stage, but again, the big 5-0 from I'm big, fat, slow, and dumb giant phase, where if you're as big as I am, you couldn't say I'm a college educated, you know, Division I athlete, because for the Giants, they were not there yet for whatever reason with WWE. I try to tell Vince, I go, Vince, look at the NBA. You've got Dirk Nowitzki pulling up from half court. You got Kevin Garnett bringing the ball up. These guys are 7'1" centers that are not supposed to be doing that. Randy Johnson, 6'11", throwing gas as a pitcher in Major League Baseball. I go, everywhere you look in sports, the Giant has evolved except for one sport, your sport, sir. And he was hooked, and he let me then pitch the blueprint character, and I told you, I lost in a minute. I said the words I said. But listen, I was set to come back. I was set to be a special surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble of 2014 in January, but my son Jackson ended up being born January 7th, 2014, 2 weeks before I was supposed to re-debut with WWE. I'd signed a new deal with them and everything. I'd left TNA. I'd done everything I thought I could there. I wrestled everybody there, and it was time to move on, because WWE told me when I left, go get me into an experience. You can't be a mid-carder. You can't be an opening act. There's only one way to go with you. Go get me into an experience. So I did. Went to New Japan, All Japan, Hustle, spent 2 years there, went then to TNA, where I spent 7 years, 67 years, and I headlined 7 pay-per-views there, got better, got main event experience that I needed to get, so I was ready to come back. Had new gear made, boots made, pads, everything. and the I was going to be able to be the blueprint there again. The crappy thing, not crappy thing, but life changes you, right? So when my son was born in the delivery room, I had no idea I was going to feel the way I was going to feel holding him. And I held him for the first time, and this just switch went off in my head that check, please, I'm done. And I'm not going back on the road anymore. I'm not wrestling 5 days a week of every month of every year. I want to be home with him. And it ended up being the right decision, you guys, because my son ended up being diagnosed as extremely nonverbal autistic just 2 short years after I made that decision. So it really was the right decision to make. Mm-hmm. And I don't look back at it for 1 second. You know, I'm now a leader in my community and creating our county's first ever Walk for Autism Awareness and Inclusion event that we just had last year. We're about to do it again this year. And a lot of good things in our city that we need more of, quite frankly.
Good for you, Matt. This is probably our shortest third count, which is great. It's fine.
No,
it's you're a busy man. No, you're a mayor.
You couldn't have ended it on a better note than that. Honestly.
Absolutely. You're a mayor. You're a freaking mayor. And I just want to point out real quick before I get you off here, WAB Master 2018, we didn't ask your question because he actually just covered it. So I don't want you to think we're ignoring you. I just want to put your name out there.
Do you want to ask it anyway? I'll answer it again. Just in case.
No. It's all good. Okay. It's all good. You answered it.
Okay.
Last thing I want to ask, and then we're done. We'll get you out of here. What's your favorite character and the favorite storyline that you think could have been bigger right now?
That I participated in or in general as a fan?
Just you as Matt Morgan. What do you think if you would have?
Oh, definitely. I'll tell you, me versus the Main Event Mafia in TNA. I had to go through every single member of the Main Event Mafia one by one to eventually get to Kurt Angle. And they had me, Vince Russo was a writer at the time, and God bless him. He got me through all these other talents where I won. And then eventually I got to Kurt Angle, Bound for Glory, our WrestleMania at the time. And they had Kurt go over. Kurt was so dismayed by this. You know how giving Kurt is.
Yeah.
Kurt was going bananas backstage and going, this makes no sense. We just told a 6-month storyline arc with this guy climbing. We need to make new main eventers here, Vince. What are we doing? And Vince's like, bro, you got to wrestle AJ Styles for the World Heavyweight title the very next month. Can't have you lose a match before that. And so that's how that's how Kurt replayed it back to me. And I told him, like, Kurt, you tried what you could. I'm not a mark but winning and losing. I'm honored to wrestle you. And that match ended up being my best match of all time, me versus Kurt Angle, Bound for Glory 2008.
Did I rep that?
Yes, I believe you did. Yeah. And it was a 25-minute match, which for me was a long match, right? Mm-hmm. So it was by far and away my best match. So the only thing I wish I could change was the outcome. And also, obviously, like every other mark wrestler of all time wants to have been heavyweight champion one time, right? So they should have built me to that point. We had the fans in the arena that were chanting next world champ at the various shows after that match, and they never got me to the finish line. And I'm not the only one. There's many what they would a writing team would consider a TNA young talents. I'm sorry, me, Joe, AJ, Bobby Roode, James Storm, we're not young talents. We were only considered young talents because Vince was comparing us against legends like Booker T, Scott Steiner, Kevin Nash, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think they missed the boat, not just on me, but others along the way that could have still been there today had they taken care of those talents.
Right.
Cool deal. Well, Matt, unfortunately, I don't want to do this, but I have to get you out of here.
Thank you, brother.
Just know that, you know, if you ever want to drop that first name in front of your name, which is mayor, you know, they just signed Okada to a $4.5 million a year.
The money today is insane. God bless the boys getting it though. God bless you getting it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But
in all seriousness, I really do want to thank you for joining. You are a beloved friend of mine. You know that.
Yes, sir.
And I just can't thank you enough. And I am very, very proud of you, by the way. I'm very, very
proud
of
you, brother.
I've heard out all your demons. Me and you talked about them. I've heard about all that stuff. And to what you are now, thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah.
Love you guys. I mean that. Love you guys at that. Thank you.
Love you back.
Thank you, RJ.
God bless you.
Thank you.
You are tuned to Ruffin and Up!
Guys, that was probably one of my favorite episodes. It was great to have Matt in and kind of see a different side of the business too, with a lot of his stuff, the transition from from WWE to TNA. And honestly, what he's doing now is great conversations as usual. And Man, Jimmy, your conversations kind of popped me this before we hit record button, and kind of saw more of Jimmy Corderas than I, you know, I've seen in the last whatever amount of time you've been with us. But hey, we're such breaking, is life.
Hey, we're breaking him in, brother.
One of the hardest things to do is to pop the boys, right?
That's true, but, Jimmy.
And if you want to see what I'm talking about, like I said at the beginning of the show, head over to the Wrestling Inc. YouTube channel and watch the recap with Jimmy, Justin, and Matt Kuhn last night. So, but without that, obviously we wouldn't have the Ref and Rants each and every day. Jimmy, just I say it, it's like a ritual. I get up, I have my coffee, go to work, sit in the parking lot and watch Ref and Rant when it comes out.
Oh, so we're both having coffee in the morning. That's a good thing, you know. And there you go. I'm having a lot of fun with it. And again, people misunderstand at times. I try to be positive at times, but at the same time, if I see something that I think needs critiquing, I will critique it. And I'm not doing it to tear down. And that's where the people, you know, this tribalism that we talked about with Matt and stuff like that. You got to stop doing that. I'm not doing it just to crap on one company and pump up another company because neither one of them are paying me. So unless they pay me, they're not going to get the flowers for no reason at all. If I'm putting something over, it's because I really, truly like it. And if I critique something, it's because I truly feel that it needs critiquing. I'm being honest. It's like I am here every week. I'm being honest with my analysis or description of whatever we're talking about.
Very fair.
So what are ways people can get a hold of you, check out all your good stuff? Obviously, Mondays, Wednesdays, and then obviously your referees.
Yeah, Mondays and Wednesdays on Wrestling Inc., doing Raw recaps on Monday nights and AEW Dynamite on Wednesday nights. And, of course, here every week with you two guys having a blast, good brothers. It's a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying it so, so much and glad to be a part of it. And, you know, my Ref and Rants, I do them from Monday to Friday on a weekly basis. Again, like I said, the views expressed are those of mine and mine alone and do not reflect those of this program, Wrestling Inc., or anybody else. I just have a lot of fun thinking I'm tightening the screws that need to be tightened, so to speak.
Speaking of screws that need to be tightened, what's up with you then, Brian?
I don't know. Loose screw, I guess. Yeah, you can catch me on social media at Maybe Hebner on Twitter and Instagram. Yes, I said Twitter. And I will say that this was a really, really, really solid show. I really enjoyed it. And Matt is such a classy guy. And he is Mayor Matt, should I say. Mayor Matt. But, wow, we've started the year off with a bang, I will have to say. And it's not going to get any less. So we're going to keep pumping it out. So,
yeah.
Jimmy, RJ, guys, we are 102 now, right?
Yeah.
102, yep. 103 next week. And yeah, that fast, guys. I can't believe it. We're coming up on, I believe, the 27th will be 2 years of the show.
Wow.
At the end of the month. So that it goes to show you, like I said before, guys, it's you don't see a lot of shows last in a year or 2 years or 100 episodes or whatnot, but looking forward.
I can't wait. Go ahead. Not to cut you off, RJ, but I can't wait till we get to episode 316 because Reffin 316 says, I just counted out your sorry ass.
Jimmy's on fire. He's on fire.
I want to cut there, but I can't. want to give a shout out to JD Hoop, who I have under good authority of saying that you'll see some great stuff coming from him and Rod there coming up at WrestleMania. So check out for some certain individuals' gear to be associated with JD and Rod. But the new announcer for OVW, AJ McKay, great to have him part of this team as well. Next week, gentlemen, you said we started the year off with a bang. It's going to keep going next week. We are going to be welcoming in Swoggle, a.k.a. Hornswoggle, next week. Oh. I know for a fact there will be a lot of great conversation, a lot of great stories next week. So, but also, I wanted to reiterate Next week, scheduling, all that had to change just a little bit. So we are going to be coming out with the show on Thursday, not Wednesday. Same time, same everything. Nothing's going to change. It's going to change the day. Scheduling came up, so we wanted to make sure that we could have Swoggle in and join us.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, we have to do. Oh, it's going to be a ton of fun. And we had to make some changes. Who cares? It's changes. That's
hard subject to change.
Well, that's it's called life, too. I mean, you know,
well, that's well, that too.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's great. It's awesome. Yeah. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Sorry. No, I'm hoping to have a little surprise for you guys next week. I'm looking for a picture. And if I could find it, my wife's going to help me. Audra, she's my go-to. Let's put it for everything. And if we could find it, I'm going to share it with you guys, and then you guys will get a gigantic pop from that. Let's put it that way.
you already gave me a gigantic pop. Look, right now, the only thing I care about is episode 316. That's it.
Well, guys, follow us all across all your social medias at Reffin' It Up on Twitter and Instagram for all the show updates, all that good stuff. Subscribe all over the place wherever you get this podcast, in addition to the gigantic pop. But until next time, for Mr. Jimmy Corderas, Mr. Brian Hebner, I'm RJ. We'll see you here next week on Reffin' It Up.
One, two, three.